Romans 1:16.
For I am not ashamed.
Not ashamed of the gospel.
For I am not ashamed of the gospel.
The gospel.
I'm not ashamed of the gospel.
For it is the power of God.
Power of God.
For it is the power of God.
For salvation.
To everyone.
For it is the power of God for salvation.
For salvation to everyone who believes.
Believes. For salvation to everyone who believes.
For it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the Not Ashamed Show at notashamedshow.us. We are not ashamed to be Americans, not ashamed to be conservatives, and most importantly, not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. We are broadcasting from the Wing Studio and ready to cover the news, politics, and current events of the day, all from a Christian point of view. Right now, we're doing sort of a special series. We're just kind of doing a free-for-all forum here, as you can tell by my lack of a prepared intro. And so I'd like to go ahead and introduce my co-host, Chris and Birdie.
Hi.
Yay.
I was thinking about something earlier. I think it's okay to be this way. And in fact, I wish more people were this way. But sort of a idea about the difference in both in the church and then also in government as well. Sort of this idea of local involvement and then macro involvement. And what I mean by that is there are a lot of people that may not fully understand what sort of the new conservatism, where there's more of a libertarian slant to it. There are certain things I just do not want the federal government doing. A lot of the things that they're not constitutionally allowed to do, for one thing, it was never intended to be the role of the federal government to be intricately involved in the lives of its citizens on a day-to-day basis. That's just not the intention that the founders had. And I think we've gotten to the point where it kind of is. And that's problematic because there was a time where people worried a lot more about local elections because those were the people that actually wound up affecting their day-to-day lives. And even though I am personally against certain things that the government could do, and I think that there is not wisdom in my local government doing it, I'm okay with it being done at the local level. And for instance, this is just one example. The Constitution is very clear that it makes no law supporting a particular religion or having a national church like England did. England had the Church of England, Spain had the Catholic Church. Different countries set up a particular religion that country was. America didn't do that, and part of that reason was it wanted the individual states to be able to set up their own religion. If you look at the time of the colonies, whether they had an official religion or not, each of the individual states sort of set up a set of government laws and precepts that were based off of whatever particular religion that they had. For instance, Pennsylvania had the Quakers, and a lot of their laws sort of reflected that pacifist attitude. And I would be perfectly okay with a lot of things that the federal government is doing if they did them at the local level. Just a good example that I can think of. People think because I'm an agriculturalist, because I support things like organic farming, at first, a lot of people believe because of that I might be a liberal if they find that out about me first. And in the classic sense, I am a liberal, but I won't get off into that. But where they sort of make that mistake is I'm perfectly okay with, in fact, I support environmental protection, even government environmental protection. But the difference is I believe it should be handled at the local level. It does not make sense to me to have the same environmental regulations on the middle of the desert in Nevada or Arizona as it does somewhere like Lake Michigan. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense to me that the environmental protections in place would be the same for those two places because they're so drastically different. The states and the local government, they have a vested interest in protecting the environment. So they're going to do so, especially if that's what the community wants. And if, for instance, a neighborhood in California, because it has a more liberal population, does not want a nuclear power plant in their town and they're willing to pay more for the energy because they don't want a nuclear power plant, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But I don't think the federal government should make sweeping regulations on every community in America not having one. It's sort of what the original intention of federalism always was. So, sort of thoughts on that.
Take, for example, the environment thing.
Right.
I understand what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I think, for one thing, that in some cases, the federal government makes local decisions when it comes to environment. So, like, they may not have the same federal law dictating a forest versus a desert.
Right? Now, that does happen. That's true. Sometimes they do make carve-outs for that particular environment.
True.
But my point is the umbrella laws cannot ever be as customized or as specialized as a local law.
True. Of course, you also run into the issue, like kind of like we talked about a couple weeks ago, where the local people obviously don't know what's best for them, so therefore we have to go in and fix it for them, right?
Sarcasm? You think?
You kind of see that too with this whole global warming deal, right?
Yeah, it's the same thing.
The problem with that is if you have people who are talking about having to make regulations impacting the globe as a whole, you can't subdivide that into local areas, right? If they believe that the ozone is being depleted, then it's not like you can just subdivide and give like a certain county their section of ozone and then they can make their choices about what to do with their part of it. Which, you know, I'm not saying I believe in global warming. I don't. But right. I'm trying to kind of see it from the other side.
No, there's nothing wrong with bringing up an argument that the opponent is likely to bring up, and that's something that can be addressed. The issue with global warming, well, I say the issue, there's quite a few issues with global warming, but the thing about global warming or climate change, whatever you want to call it, is that it in and of itself is designed to be this giant umbrella thing that encompasses everyone, because that's exactly the narrative progressives want. Like, the whole thing is fabricated specifically so it can redistribute wealth. That's the only purpose that it is serving or has ever served. But taking that out of the argument, sort of taking that aside, your particular choices on your land, and keep in mind, I'm an agriculturalist. Preserving land, preserving topsoil, that's something that's really important to me and also a lot of the people that I know and am friends with. That is something that is the individual person's responsibility, and they, in my opinion, ought to have the freedom to do that, because when that freedom is made available to them, they're going to make less mistakes and going to make good decisions. Because I never believed this whole narrative. They try to make it out a lot of times. People that are, whether they're animal rights activists or whatever, they'll say, well, those farmers, all they're worried about is profit. So what they're going to do is they're going to mistreat the cows and the pigs, and they're just going to abuse them, or the farmers that grow produce. Well, all they care about is products, so they're going to load it down with pesticides and rape the land and keep it from being productive later. The farmer lives on the land. And if he destroys the land, he doesn't have any profits. You saying that all he cares about is profit then defeats your own argument, because you're saying all he cares about is his profit. And yet the very next claim out of your mouth is, but the thing that makes him profit, he tries to destroy.
Yeah, if the land dies, the farmer does too.
Mm-hmm. He's not going to make any money. And if he sells meat that's been bruised up and looks terrible, he's not going to make as much money on it. So it doesn't make sense for him to abuse his animals. Does that happen? Yeah, in super rare cases, but the free market takes care of that anyway, because they're not going to be profitable for very long. So it's sort of the same thing. And I know we're harping on the environment thing, even though that's really not the thrust of what I was getting at. My point was, even though I am completely against the EPA, think that it should not exist, nor should it have ever existed, and there should be no national regulations on the environment, I have no problem with an individual community saying, yeah, the glue factory's turning all the grass yellow and we really don't want it here. If an individual community says that, if a mayor makes ruling on that with the consent of his people because it's local and he's held accountable for that and they're willing to forego any profit or jobs that comes with that, in my opinion, that's their decision. Another conservative thing. I'm not necessarily for the government taking over the internet to regulate pornography. But I have no problem with the mayor of a town saying, you know what, we probably shouldn't put the adult bookstore right next to the preschool. And if he wants to say that, if he wants to say that, and that's the will of the people as well, and they elected him because he had that set of standards, go ahead. I have no problem with that. But that's the difference in this big government centralized planning and individual things. And I think that kind of spills over into the church. And by the way, I mean no offense to those of you who are in churches that might have this. I'm just using it as an example. But that's the difference in churches like the Methodist, the Catholic, the Church of Latter-day Saints churches that all have big centralized planning at one point, and they sort of delve out. Because one thing that I thought was strange about the Methodist is that every preacher in every Methodist church in the United Methodist Church in America every single one of them preach on the same thing every single Sunday because they get, no, I'm serious. They get,
I knew one group did that, but I thought it was Presbyterians.
Well, they may do it too, but I'm fairly certain that, in fact, I know for a fact the Methodists do that.
Oh, okay.
Because my grandfather's a Methodist.
Oh, well then I will yield to your experience because you have more than I do already.
But what I'm saying is that's sort of the difference in local planning and centralized planning. And that's why personally, I don't care for it because the picture that we're given in the New Testament is that the local churches, the local elders and the congregation makes decisions on that instead of having a big centralized idea, because maybe David and Goliath is not a good subject matter for that particular Sunday. Maybe the preacher needs to preach on something else. Maybe there's something going on in his community or something that's going on in the congregation itself that he feels needs to be preached on that is not that subject. And not just that, other things that go on with the church too. We were actually having a lesson not long ago by our minister where we go to church talking about one of the things they did on Wednesday night. They had a lot of young parents and they had a hard time getting home on time and getting dinner and everything. So what they did was they started having a meal at the church building before that gave them the opportunity to get some fellowship, get to know each other. And unlike most congregations, once Bible class was over, it was just over and they didn't meet back in the auditorium. And he said, I'm not saying that we ought to do that here, but that's what worked for us. And there's nothing wrong with that. Making local decisions that's best for your congregation. That's the way the New Testament was designed.
When I was in Arizona, they were doing a Wednesday night lesson and they were using Mussel and a Shovel as kind of a source book to kind of guide the discussions they were having, which if you haven't read it, it's a very interesting and challenging book, or so I hear. I actually haven't gotten through the whole thing yet. One thing that he was bringing out was the master plan of God to arrange the local church the way he has, right? The local church is autonomous. The local church has a group of elders, pastors, overseers, shepherds, whatever word you want to use. They're all the same.
Bishops, the Bible uses a lot of those
words. In the Greek, all those words are the same. And there's a group of them overseeing the local church and making those decisions. Now, a lot of churches, you know, so-called churches in our world don't do that. But if you go and look at the New Testament example, every time you see the word that's translated elder, bishop, overseer, pastor, or whatever, it's always plural.
Right.
He sent us through about maybe a dozen to 15 verses. Like he went through every verse in the New Testament that mentions it. And it's always plural. And so I thought that was really interesting that point he brought out. There's a reason for that, you know, that keeps too much power from being in one person's hands when it comes to making decisions for the local congregation. And that's the problem you have a lot of times these days where one person rises up in a congregation and he's in charge, the pastor or the whatever, and too much is placed on them. And you start just to follow their teachings as opposed to what the scripture says.
Well, obviously, in a less direct way, but even our government was sort of set up like that. Because by the time our revolution was over and we had our own country and the Articles of Confederation and then later the Constitution, we already had a little over 100 years worth of experience governing ourselves because the states were governed individually. Now they had a king, they were subject to his laws, but by and large, they kind of governed themselves. And the individual communities and cities had a lot more influence and power than had ever been seen in the history of the world, except maybe for, you could make an argument for some of the Greek city-states. But nonetheless, you had this very decentralized idea of power and that power should remain primarily within the local community. And that's one of the things that I think would really be sort of a model for us to follow today, because I think that the problem that we have is we have made things way too centralized. A good example is, look at our education system. Our education system was the envy of the rest of the world up until the 1970s. Well, what happened in the 1970s? We founded the United States Board of Education. We had a federal government executive office for education, and we've been delving into it ever since, and our schools have continued to get worse and worse and worse because we keep trying to centrally plan them. The kids in California don't necessarily need to learn exactly the same things and exactly the same pace as the kids in Maine or Utah or wherever else. And the states usually did the majority of the oversight, but there really wasn't even that much oversight because the teacher in his own classroom made a lot of his own decisions. The church is exactly the same way, and I think that they kind of modeled their ideas of government off of the church because of that. In fact, I know they did. They have there's historical backing for that. So you sort of look at that and the way the church works. Look at charity. There's nothing wrong with big charities. There's nothing wrong with national charities. But the reason that the church was supposed to be a charitable organization, and this goes all the way back to the book of Acts and also some of the epistles, you look at the way the church handled charity. The church is a big enough organization to handle big tasks in its community, but it is small enough and personal enough to know how to treat people as individuals. Because if you have a person, he really is in need of some sort of financial assistance, and you provide for him food or shelter or clothing or whatever else, try to help him get a job, whatever it is. The church is very good at doing that, and what makes the church better at doing that than the federal government is, A, it's more personal, and there's a good chance he's going to be influenced by that church because of that, and B, if he gets to the point where he is lazy and he's just taking help because he wants to take help and doesn't want to fend for himself, the church has the discretion to cut him off and try to force him into making better decisions. I say force, that's not actually what I meant, but persuade him into making better decisions. Whereas how many people in our country are on federal assistance and have no intention of ever getting off of it?
Well, no incentive to.
Exactly. But the church, because it's personal and it knows what's going on in the individual's life because it speaks to him every week or so on and so forth, they are able to have a special amount of discretion that the federal government will never have, no matter how good their system could work theoretically. So I think that idea of being good people, being good individuals, and then going to a church that is making a real difference in the community and striving to help people just works so much better than depending on a big centralized power to do so. And I know that there are a lot of churches that have a more centralized structure that I mentioned that do a lot of good things, but it was always the design of God to have the individual autonomous congregations with the ability to make their own decisions and essentially just to follow the Bible and follow Him rather than look to another source for their information.
It's just more efficient when you have the upper group giving direction to the lower groups, but the lower groups being able to make their own decisions. And so a few different things pop in my mind. First, it kind of makes me think of my microeconomics class and how we talk about using all your resources. If the upper management is micromanaging and trying to do everything themselves, then you're not using your resources, and the resources being those lower people and their ability to make decisions. And then literature connection. It makes me think of Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, which has often been used as a leadership manual. Well, the way he developed his leadership skills was very, I guess you would say, decentralized, because he had his authority and he had direction over all these groups of people. And for people who haven't read the book or watched the movie, he's fighting aliens. It's a lot of fun. So he has all these these little battalions under him, but he allows each group to make their own decisions while following his instructions, because he can't be efficient if he's trying to tell everyone exactly every little detail of how they're supposed to do things.
That's a good point. That's actually made me think of my dad, who's an elder now in the church that I'm from back home.
I didn't know your dad was an elder now.
Yeah. That's been one of his main thoughts, is to make sure, if you read the Bible, it talks about elders and then it talks about deacons.
Right.
And his ideas are, I don't need to be micromanaging the church. That's not my job. That's not what I'm supposed to be doing. And so he really likes to place emphasis on giving deacons jobs to do and making sure those things are well defined and that the deacons are well equipped to go out and do those things. And checking up on them and saying, okay, do you need anything? Are you running into any trouble? You know, do you need some advice? But not going in and doing their job for them, because that's not what he's supposed to do. That's not why he's there. So he's kind of taken that kind of approach, I think, since he's become an elder, is to try to give the deacons who are doing a lot of the groundwork and organizing what they need to get things done without stepping in directly.
Well, Chris, just because you're older and have been with me longer, you'll be able to answer this.
Where are you going with this?
You'll be able to answer this better. When we were first starting out in the college group, how much easier was it when we started having people we could delegate things to?
That's true. That's very true.
And they didn't do everything exactly the way we would have done it probably, but it all got done and we picked good people that we trusted to handle those jobs and it all worked out just fine. The good Christian does not care how God's will gets done as long as it gets done. It doesn't matter to him who gets the credit for it, nor who does the work as long as it is accomplished. Now, he does his best to accomplish it and make sure it's seen out. But the point is, you don't have to be breathing down someone's back to make sure that kind of thing gets done. And I think that the same model can be used for the church. Because look at Acts and look at the epistles and the way that the churches were managed back then. There were several times where Paul had to come in, whether in letters or in person, and he had to make some corrections. But he would tell them what they could improve on and what they could work on, but he left it up to them to do it. Usually he would come, he would deliver his message, and he'd go somewhere else where he was needed more. He didn't stay to make sure every little detail was accomplished. And I think that that's a good model for us to follow as well. Look at the church at, was it Ephesus? That with the gatherings, they gathered up a collection for the congregation at Jerusalem.
I thought it was Colossae, or maybe...
It may be Colossae.
Maybe the Galatians.
We have three options so far.
Sorry, there's a bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of different
Antioch, Thessalonica, Philippians, or Philippi.
The point is, there was a church.
Well, actually, this happened a couple times, so we could be right multiple times. But I'm leaning more towards Ephesus and Colossae, but these were newer congregations that were helping out an older congregation in Jerusalem because there was a lot of need for it at that particular time. And Paul, based on his writings, we know that he asked them to make an offering and he commended them later for making this offering and getting it to Jerusalem. You notice Paul said they need help. He didn't say, this is how much you're going to take up, this is how you're going to do it, and this is how you're going to deliver it. He just said the church at Jerusalem needs help, and they raised up way more money than they expected to and sent it to Jerusalem before Paul even had a chance to respond. That's one of the beauty of the efficiencies of a local congregation that is just striving to do God's will, striving to follow the Bible, do what's right, and they do it without a ton of oversight. You don't need a big centralized church or a bishop that's over several churches or cardinals or popes or any of that. Again, I'm not trying to be offensive. I'm just going by what the Bible says. We don't need all that infrastructure because each person is his own priest. His body is his own temple. And the only priest that he needs to go through to get to God is Jesus Christ. And anything else is just adding middlemen for no apparent reason. And if you know anything about government or really any other institution, anytime you start adding a whole bunch of middlemen, the message usually winds up getting watered down and changed, and efficiency just goes through the floor.
Heard it through the grapevine.
We're doing Creedence Clearwater Revival in here now. We should do the goat version. No, I'm kidding.
Let's not even go there.
love the goats. / sheep.
Yeah, some of those are sheep, mislabeling the livestock in those videos. But anyway, I do think that that's something we can all work towards. God always designed for his people to be able to make their own decisions. Despite what some people, especially skeptics of the Bible, may tell you, God wants you to think. The will of God is not always easy, but it is always simple. He always tells you what you need to know. He always equips you. He says that you'll never be able to face a temptation that you do not have an escape route, a way to overcome what he's put before you. God never leaves us ill-equipped to do what we need to do, and he never makes things overly complicated to the point where it is not possible for us to understand what he wants us to do. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to the Not Ashamed Show on notashamedshow.us.
Hey, this is Caleb Cockwit from the Not Ashamed Show. Part of being a Christian is just realizing that you're not perfect. And here at the Not Ashamed Show, we're far from perfect. Sometimes we make mistakes too. So we've assembled a blooper reel. We hope you find them as funny as we did.
So Clinton's entire tenure as our...
It's for you to say.
No, it's not, actually.
That's sarcasm.
You sure about that?
Jacob, shut up. I'm recording.
Sorry. The body. I'm sorry.
I wish we had a cough button like the ESPN studio does, but we don't.
Just. You can still hear that.
I'm reading the NIV.
No. Well, I wanted you to read it out of the Bible, but if you want to read it out of the NIV.
Hell, I will.
Well, you got it?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Ooh, I have sweaty thumbs and it's throwing my touchscreen off.
I don't need to know about every little thing that happens to your body, Bear.
Blooper reel.
Oh, that is not going in the blooper reel. Yeah.
It is the Princess Bride, by the way.
If you haven't seen that movie, you're just mostly dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's
not
a big
the
difference.
There's a big difference.
That, between mostly dead and all dead.
And all dead. Because once you're mostly dead, there's really only one thing you can do.
Go through your pockets and look for loose change.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Better ask to go to Disney World, but yeah.
That's not in the movie. All right. Number 7. Hey, you must have known Solomon because he talks about you in Proverbs 31. Jacob, get off trivia cracked.
I was turning it off, okay?
All right, we're going to record that one again.
Well, that's going to be our show for this weekend.
This weekend?
I'm looking for my notes, Chris. I'm not concentrating on what I'm saying.
Someone's getting ahead of themselves.
John 13, 34 and 35. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Not Ashamed Show at notashamedshow.us. We're not ashamed to be Americans, not ashamed to be conservatives, and most importantly, not ashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm actually going this one alone, but just to give everybody an update on what's going on right now, I have changed jobs. I'm actually working in the Montgomery market as opposed to the Auburn market, and we're still looking at several options. There's going to be quite a scheduling conflict because Chris is moving out of town soon, and a lot of things have just been going on. It's very, very hectic right now, but the overall point is that we are working at it. We're looking into several different options to keep the show coming. We will probably have another open forum episode next episode, but I'm just going to go ahead and monologue this one. It's just me right now. So there was something sort of going along with the theme of this show that I thought was important. And it's something that we can all take a lesson from. We've talked a lot about local involvement versus central planning, and I think that it's something that we all need to understand. If we want the government to do less, we have to do more. If we don't want the federal government being the one to delve out charity, as it were, even though what they're doing isn't really charity, but if we want them not to take part in the welfare program or the Social Security program, it is up to us to get involved with our community and take care of those that are less fortunate and take care of those that are elderly. There was a time in this country where that really wasn't a concern, and the reason that it wasn't is because the churches handled all of that stuff, and in my opinion, that is the role of the church anyway. And it's not just within the churches and with charity, but it's also with other things that the government does. If we want to make sure there's no need for an environmental protection agency, we need to be good stewards of our own land and protect the environment. If we want to make sure that there's no reason for a redistribution of wealth, even though there's never any justification for it, we need to be charitable giving people ourselves, and most of us already are. I understand that. But if we want the federal government to do less, we must do more. And that's really the thought that I'd like to leave you with, because if we can band together as communities, as cities or counties or however you want to look at it, if we can bind ourselves together through a set of common principles, it doesn't matter if you're Christian or Muslim or Jewish or atheist, if we can get together and take care of people, make sure that their needs are met, make sure that we have law and order in our communities, and just be good, decent people, that's going to solve 90% of our problems anyway, even if there is a draconian government. So please, please get involved with your own communities, stay involved in local elections, look to the local to be the only part of government that plays a part in your daily life. Get involved with your local public schools, do volunteer work, just be good people. You know, the Bible says, when Christ is talking in the famous Sermon on the Mount, he says, "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on the hill cannot be hidden." Its light shines to everyone around it and guides people to it. That's what America should be. That's what President Reagan believed America was, that shining city set on a hill. And he didn't believe that because we had a great government. He didn't believe that because we had a great military, even though we do. He believed that because we had great people. People that were involved with their communities, people that genuinely wanted to do the right thing, weren't trying to steal from anyone or bamboozle anyone. In general, Americans are still good people. And we're usually not hung up on things like racism or whatever else is the topic of the day, even though that grabs a lot of headlines. And yes, those problems do sometimes exist. But just be good people. Be good to one another. Christ also says the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the second is likened to it, to love your neighbor as yourself. Just treat other people the way you would want to be treated. And I guarantee you, that's going to solve probably 95% of our problems anyway. That is our show for this evening. If you have any questions or comments, remember that you can email us at notashamedshow@gmail.com. If you would like to ask us any Bible questions, you can also email those to us at the same address, notashamedshow@gmail.com. Also, you can like our Facebook page, Not Ashamed Show, for updates and events. Follow us on Twitter, @NotAshamedShow. If you would like to comment on this episode, just tweet #TempleOfTheHeart. That's #TempleOfTheHeart. We're always happy to get feedback from our listeners, positive or negative. We will be back on the air, as always, this upcoming Thursday, both on our website, notashamedshow.us, and the RSS feed on iTunes. Stay the course, friends.